This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 18th of August 2014 on Monocle 24. Culture with Robert Bound is brought to you in association with Persol. Hello and welcome to the 149th edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're proud to present to you something of a special show coming to you from the Green Man Festival in the sprawling cultural metropolis that is Crick Howell near Abergavenny in Wales. Come now, we've been enjoying the dispatches from festivals all over the world, and so we decided to pitch our own tent, don our wellies and brave the famous Welsh sunshine to bring you our take on Green Man 2014. Here's what we have, friends. We'll speak to music writer and festival aficionado Pete Perfides about why, after years of honing his festival craft, he chooses Green Man.
The best festival experiences I have are not absolutely contingent on the bands. You know, there are sadly down to boring things like infrastructure, and that's what Fiona has brought to the Green Man.
And because one Pete's just not enough, we'll hang out with beer guru Pete Brown to work our way through the grog list.
I think when people go to a festival, they want, whether it's beer or food or the bands that they're seeing, they want to see something they've not had before. They want to be a bit adventurous and do something they wouldn't do just at home.
Plus, while we're on site here, we'll find out why a surgeon's donned his scrubs. It's not a case of mammoth overindulgence, I promise. We'll hear from the wonderful band Daughter, Jeffrey Lewis and Nick Mulvey, and get live music from our pick of the Green Man sessions, and ask the boss of the comedy tent what's tickling his funny bone this weekend. That's all to come here on a special Green Man Festival edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. We might be out of the studio this week, but we're still doing things the Culture way by kicking things off with a song. Over the weekend, we've had an array of bands stop by to play for us, and amongst them are this lot. François and the Atlas Mountains are a British-French group whose rumbling drums and electronic-infused pop is reminiscent of Wild Beasts. Not the Beasts, the band. Ahead of their Friday set on the Walled Garden stage, they played this for us, Summer of a Heart.
Voices calling, is this real? Voices calling, like in a dream. Cops undercover, in the summer street. London town, is the sea. Voyage to the summer of a heart. Summer of the heart, where the time has
That was Francois and the Atlas Mountains performing Summer of a Heart.
Please give a huge Green Man welcome to Wollongong.
All right, we're at the Green Man Festival in the none more exotic climes of the rolling Welsh countryside, and we need to know why we're here and just who the Green Man is. In these situations, we turn to the music writer and festival legend Pete Perfides, who's seen it all, heard it all, and despite needing no introduction, we've just introduced him.
I was drunk inside my socks, laughing as I
I've been to almost every single Green Man. I think the first one in 2003 was sort of 30 people, most of whom were Fence Records recording artists,
right,
sort of standing around a ditch. Singing folk songs. And then it was slightly more formal in 2004. So, coming in with my family. They wander around and it's all very safe and lovely.
You're an old Green Man hand. You've got green fingers.
Indeed.
And how's it grown? It's obviously grown, from your recommendation, it's grown in a really good, organic sort of way, with its heart intact.
So it was kind of supposed to be a kind of quasi-pagan, kind of communing with nature, invocation to the earthly spirits to come and look after us for a weekend. So a lot of indie, kind of alt folk, indie art were just kind of coming through at the time. The Fence Gang were quite crucial to that. Joanna Newsom was an early performer here. The Incredible String Band played one of their last shows together here. And so it kind of grew from that. And then after, that was at Baskerville Hall, which was near Hay-on-Wye. And it was a very, very well-meaning but occasionally sort of shambolic affair. The infrastructure was a little bit kind of creaky.
And everyone was scared to walk across the marsh at night, presumably.
I certainly was. I'm not sure about my children. It moved to this wonderful place, the Glenusk Estate. And it was immediately kind of a lot better, really, because there's this wonderful natural amphitheatre where the main stage is called the mountain stage, like, because you can see a mountain directly behind the main stage. Especially if you're with kids, you kind of look at the billings of a lot of festivals and you think, well, will we have a nice time at this one or should we go to that one instead? And what you tend to do is you often tend to look at which bands are playing. And obviously, you want to go to a festival where you like the bands that are playing, but actually, I find that the best festival experiences I have are not absolutely contingent on the bands. There are sadly down to boring things like infrastructure and whether or not you can actually everything you need, or if like the heavens open, are there contingency plans? And that's what Fiona has brought to the Green Man as well. Just his sense of, okay, we can have this beautiful kind of hello tree, hello skies, kind of communing of sort of earth and nature and all of that, but we do need to be able to kind of have toilets at work as well and all that kind of stuff, and great food. The food's brilliant.
And so you're straddling two stools between the Muso and the urban planner.
Absolutely. The thing I like about it the most actually is, like, so we kind of set up base camp just sort of on the lip of the sort of the natural amphitheatre by the mountain stage, beneath the trees by the stream, and all our gang is sort of there, and our children wander off, so our children know where to go back to, and we can hear the music. It's only about half a minute to walk over to see the band, so you can walk over. It's just all very idyllic.
You're mentioning your children, and I know that they've sort of, by hook and by crook, been influential in how this is set out, because the kids area, obviously, there's moments in a festival when the parents want to go off and do non-kids stuff, I guess, like that. And that's been organically grown, and there's some interesting ideas of how that's worked. Tell us
Our kids were called in to the Green Man offices last year. It's such a simple idea. You wonder why more people don't do it. But Fiona, who sort of now runs it with her son, Ben Coleman now, called him in, called me and said, look, do you mind if you just kind of, if we like get some cake and stuff and like some drink, do you think your kids might mind coming in and telling us what they kind of like in a festival? Because actually, it seems obvious, but just ask kids and they'll tell you what they came up with. I think some of the ideas were in play. I think they kind of like, one of the first things, like my oldest daughter said, was it'd be great to have a space where we can play capture the flag.
Yeah.
And, or actually, even like a big empty space where you can just, you know, run and play in, you know. And I think so, ideas like that are so fundamentally sort of simple. It would never occur to an adult to have an idea like that.
And obviously a massive pool full of crocodiles and...
Absolutely.
And a free sweet shop.
And well, they said treasure hunt. That was the other thing that I think was... implemented.
But it's funny walking around, there's a sort of family vibe without it still keeping a big, you know, there's some fantastic bands on and there's very much a musical vibe. Quite a difficult balance to catch,
yeah, somehow it kind of works. Somehow, you know, those of us who just didn't completely like give up listening to music, just sort of like, because when you have kids, you know, you sort of, you realign your aspirations, you just want to stay in, just about somehow stay in the game of like just knowing what's going on. You don't want to be kidding yourself that you can stay cutting edge if you ever were. You just want to have a vague idea what's going on. And a festival like this is great because it's a great primer, it's a great crash course, and somehow it just seems to absorb the attention spans of kids. Like, you know, last year, actually, I'll tell you one, like before we left, I just had to quickly look something up on my daughter. The nearest computer that I had to hand was my daughter's, my 13-year-old daughter, Dora. And I kind of opened up Safari, and the last Google search was making dens, because she wanted to get some tips on making dens by the kind of woody tree area by the stream, because that's what she'd spent a day doing last year, and she wanted to finesse her den-making technique.
So, and this is the festival in which to do it?
Well, she was probably doing it right now.
And finally, let's talk about the music. You've been manning Green Man Radio this morning.
Indeed.
The best track I heard was something new from Martin Carr.
Yes.
Maybe you should tell us about that, and then we'll talk about how you program what you play and whether you program what you play.
Well, I did a couple of playlists with a kind of like a long list of things that I thought would sound good in this kind of environment. And then, but it's so oscillating between that and scrolling through other things. But I've had so many great times here with Martin, and Martin comes every year. He'll be here somewhere right now. I loved his band, the Boo Radleys, and through loving his band, we became friends. And the thing with friends who make music is you're really secretly willing them to just come back with a kind of killer track that reminds you why you were so proud of them all along. And he's absolutely done this with his new single, Santa Fe Skyway, which is just, it's just like somehow just like mainlining sunshine on a record. It's just so beautiful. So I'm delighted for him.
That was Pete Perfidi's writing The Good Ship, Green Man. Next up, Pete the Second will be talking beer and cider and festival shenanigans. That'll be Pete Brown. And now it's lunchtime, and so I've met Pete Brown, beer expert and drinks writer generally. The World's Best Cider is his newest book. But what have we got in front of us here, Pete?
What we've got here is a selection of four beers from the Green Man Beer and Cider Tent. They did this for the first time last year. They've got 99 different Welsh beers and ciders in one tent, which is absolutely heaving. It's just taken us about 20 minutes to get to the bar. And I think that's testament to the interest that there is in beer, and to a lesser extent, slightly perhaps at the moment, cider. But the new variety of interesting artisanal, if you like, craft beers and ciders that's around. And to get 99 different drinks from Wales. And by the way, this is a small selection of what they could have had. It's just incredible.
There's a bit of a moment happening. We were talking, weren't we, in the queue about all sorts of things, because it was long enough. We could have written a 3-volume novel, I think, in that queue. But we were talking about the fact that there's a bit of a moment where the drinks offering at festivals has finally caught up with the food offering. It seems to be very strong here at Green Man. As you say, there's the sort of more generic brands of lagers and things have very short queues compared to the sort of real stuff right here.
Some festivals are catching up with what people want when they go to a festival. I think when people go to a festival, they want, whether it's beer or food or the bands that they're seeing, they want to see something they've not had before. They want to be a bit adventurous and do something they wouldn't do just at home. And you still go to some festivals where there is one big corporate, commercial, multinational, global lager brand and one big UK cider brand, and they think that people are going to be happy with that. And then you look at this tent and how packed this tent is compared to every other beer tent on site. And by the way, the beer tents on site at Green Man generally are better than the ones you get at most festivals, but this one is something else.
We're going to go round round a rather makeshift table. We're going clockwise. What have we got?
A Bavarian-style wheat beer. One of the most exciting things about the beer scene now is that every, you know, beer's been made for 3,000 years, and every country that has a beer tradition has got its own styles, as you'd expect. And what's happening now is that all the traditions from different beer brewing countries are cross-fertilizing and overlapping, and we're getting these amazing different experiments and stuff. So this is not a beer style. 10 years ago, I would have been surprised to find this beer style brewed outside Munich, outside Bavaria, really, and now it's being brewed in South Wales. So it's really exciting.
Let's have a go on this one.
So that's got a citrusy lemoniness to it, a bit of bitterness, a bit of smokiness, and a kind of banana and toffee character as well. Mm. Definite bananas in there. This is only wheat and barley and hops that's made this beer, but you've got almost like a fruit salad in there, and that to me is very faithful to the Bavarian tradition. It's a good wheat beer. And wheat beer is such a brilliant food matcher. That goes incredibly well with spicy food, with creamy food, with desserts. It's just such a brilliant beer.
Yeah, it does. It feels like I'm on a Strasse rather than whatever the Welsh is for street. I guess we're not. We're going to move round now, Pete. This seems to me like a sort of... This seems like it's got a traditional golden... Yeah. Coloured ale. What have we got here?
We're back in sort of more familiar territory here, as you say. This is a beer from the Wain Brewery, which is not wine. It's W-A-E-N, which is a place in Mid Wales, or at least a name in Mid Wales. I love these guys. Everything they make is just a cut above what you expect. The people who make these beers just have a surer touch than a lot of their contemporaries. And this is a summer ale, basically. Quite light, quite pale. It's meant to be fairly refreshing. So they call the beer Pamplemousse. There's a real grapefruit character to this beer. There's a very popular hop around at the moment called Citra, which is so popular, it's run out, basically. And I would guess that Citra is one of the hops in this, because you've got this real grapefruit zinginess to it.
I can smell that coming up.
Yeah, so it's a beautiful summer drink. You'd sink a few pints of that if you could get to the bar quicker than we can.
Exactly. Where are we finishing? We're finishing somewhere... I hope this isn't an omen for the weather, Pete, but we're looking a bit dark and stormy here. It's a sort of stouty type of thing.
Porter is a dark kind of Industrial Revolution beer style that came out of London. It tends to have chocolatey and coffee notes, maybe a bit of sort of dark, rich red wine note to it as well. It used to be the drink that everyone in London drank. Colossal amounts of it. It really was the first beer brewed on an industrial scale. It inspired Guinness. Guinness started off as a porter recipe that was then made stronger or stouter, and then that became brewed to stout. Those natural flavours that exist because of the dark, complex malts that are in it, they've been subtly enhanced by the addition of a bit of plum and a bit of chilli. So you've got those dark fruit notes, just kind of, it's not excessive, it's not a fruit beer. It's just kind of giving little accentuations on the flavours that are already there.
So we've been sort of around the world, we've been around Wales, but we've kind of been around the world in the same time. We've kind of got a sort of lot of international history and culture that are in all these four Welsh beers. There's other stuff that you do, obviously, at the festival, Pete. One thing is matching beers to bands and all the rest of it. This is part of the book signing that you did earlier today. But talk about the rest of Pete Brown's world. How do you match beers to people, beers to bands? Talk us through some of that.
I start matching beer and music as a bit of fun to bring my two passions together. And also because, you know, you can intuitively say, yeah, if I'm in that kind of mood, I want to listen to this kind of music, I want to drink this kind of drink. And then I found out that there's a huge amount of neuroscience that underlies it. There are sound principles that different flavours have their own sounds that correspond with them. So sweetness, for example, tends to be high-pitched, melodic, harmonious. Bitterness tends to be low and sonorous and smooth. Acidity tends to be dissonant and atonal and sort of fractured and so on. So it sounds weird, but when you play the appropriate sounds with the appropriate flavours to people, about 60% of people give you the answer that you're hoping for. So it's a fascinating thing.
Maybe with a couple of the headliners at this year's Green Man, maybe you could match a headliner, you can match a band with a beer.
Yeah, well, I just did my show this morning matching the beers and bands of Green Man. One of the headliners that people seem really excited about seeing is First Aid Kit. A defining feature of that band, one of the huge source of their appeal, is the beautiful close harmonies of the two sisters who sing their songs. It's just a wonderful sound. And to me, that harmony is sweetness. So the third beer we tried, the Summer Ale, the kind of grapefruit character, the fruity character in that, with those female harmonies, just is bliss. And that's what I'll be drinking when they're on stage.
That was beer writer Pete Brown running me through this year's Ale and Cider list at the Green Man Festival. After the break, we'll be meeting European folk group Daughter and exploring the nooks and crannies of the festival.
The Globalist provides insight and analysis of the key news and business stories in Europe and the Middle East. Informed, engaging, and authoritative, it's a 60-minute bulletin of news, features, and opinion. Two presenters in London are joined by guests in our studio and all around the world, including Monocle's editors and friends in our Hong Kong and Tokyo bureau. The Globalist also features an extended daily newspaper review with a special guest here in Midori House. And of course, we round up the business headlines with an expert analyst in a key city. All that and more every weekday at 6 a.m. London time on The Globalist.
Welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bound. We're at the Green Man Festival this weekend, polishing off the summer in style. And what about the bands? One of our favourites were Daughter, a London-based trio with a neat line in haunting harmony, illustrated rather beautifully by their debut album of last year called If You Leave. Before their set on the main mountain stage, they gave us a minute or two of their prep time.
Shadows settle on the place that you left. Our minds are troubled by the emptiness. Destroy the middle, it's a waste of time. From the perfect start to the finish line.
It is literally just the most beautiful stage, and I think that in itself is something that, you know, I just think it's so nice to look at that even if we sound rubbish, look at the view, it would be great.
Yeah. And in terms of the festival circuit, we know you've been busy touring the record. Do the festivals choose you, or do you choose the festivals? How much sort of give and take is there?
So I think last year, basically, we did just as many festivals as possible, really. This year, we were much more picky. I mean, we ended up wanting to do four or five around Europe and the UK, and we ended up doing seven, I think, just because we're easily convinced when it comes to festivals. But Green Man was definitely like on our list. Like, it was a big one. But this year's been, we've just been very picky. So we chose all places we really enjoyed playing or places we hadn't played before. So for example, we went to Poland and Latvia, and those were really like awesome places we just hadn't ever set foot in.
Yeah.
And the festivals and the crowds were just amazing.
And is that one of the things, that one of the ways that you guys judge the festival is on the crowds, not necessarily having your choruses sung back to you, but just the general vibe?
Yeah.
Is that something that must be the thing, right?
No, definitely. It's part of that's the experience. I mean, you just end up, you're there for the whole day, and then you play your show, which is 45 minutes to an hour and a half, but you have the whole day, you know, to enjoy as well. And if it's just a kind of a sterile, ultra commercial festival, it's just, you know, where there's no other bands you want to see or something, it's just it's not gonna, you know, you're not gonna come out of that really happy, I think.
And that's one of the downsides about being a musician in that sense is that most of the time you can only stay for one day, or because you have to go somewhere else or something. And when you're at Green Man, you kind of feel like, I want to stay here the entire weekend. There's so many bands playing tomorrow and Sunday that I would love to see. And then, I remember Latitude was the same. Just like, you kind of look at the site and I want to stay there and come back every year.
And can you enjoy it? I know that you guys have obviously got this afternoon, you've got quite a lot of this evening before you go on stage. There are a few jitters, butterflies, but that's in a good way. But can you kind of go out and enjoy yourselves and see everything before? I mean, obviously afterwards is a whole different kettle of fish. I will not ask you about your post gig routines, but what about your pre-gig routines?
The gym's out. I think that it's strange. I personally don't think I can be fully calm if it's a show day ever. I think it's just the way that I am. But I think this environment, for instance, it's just totally chilled out. So I think that's helping. I think if it was some crazy, like everyone's going wild and there's people in suits, animal outfits. I don't know.
People in suits. There's a Scream Man's famous for that. There's a lot of pinstripe bowler hats and FTs under the arm.
But, you know, I don't know. This seems like a good environment to be in pre-gig, so that's nice. I might just lay it on the ground somewhere.
That was Daughter, and their record If You Leave is out now on 4AD. Up next, well, surgery, obviously. It's not all music and drinking here at Green Man. There's ample opportunity to learn a thing or two as well. Einstein's Garden is a haven of scientific experiments and informative lectures. It's where science meet the arts. From bell ringing inspired by climate change to mobile phone chargers powered by bikes and quite a few things about which, frankly, I have no idea. And on that theme, I spoke to the exquisitely named Dr. Roger Kneebone. He's Professor of Surgery at Imperial College London, and in his show, Surgery, Who Pulls the Strings?, he compares the intricate skills required to operate on people to those needed by a puppeteer. I met him in Einstein's Garden after his performance on the Omni stage.
Okay, so we had a little moment there where things weren't quite as they had been before. You probably heard the pulse rate that of the patient going up, and probably the pulse rate of everybody else was going up, because when this happens, all sorts of things are happening together. All those things that we talked about separately are all happening at the same time. Laura's having to do things quickly.
I think the operating theatre is a theatrical space anyway, and I think most people are familiar with it through film and television, but seeing it happen, or seeming to happen in front of one's eyes, is rather different. And so we gave a sense of what goes on in a real operating theatre by having a real surgeon, anaesthetist and scrub nurse there around a model that looked pretty realistic for a music festival at any rate, and gave a strong sense, I think, of how these key people work together in an operating theatre on the form of a patient who in this case was under general anaesthetic, and how their movements are coordinated and seamlessly integrated. Even though they're saying hardly anything to one another, it's all done by how they read one another's bodies, how they've worked before perhaps, how they coordinate their movements and not just what they say.
There is a sort of, you used the metaphor and you cooperated and collaborated there with a puppeteer, and a specific form of a Japanese puppet which relies on three people working different parts of the body to illustrate how surgeons work. You could almost have done it with a band, couldn't you?
I've done a lot of work with jazz musicians, looking at how they, and indeed classical and string quartets, but jazz musicians are particularly interesting because of the improvisational nature of what they do, and sometimes in surgery we have to improvise too. For instance, if I'm operating on somebody who's been run over by a bus or fallen out of a tree or something, we know to begin with that they're seriously injured, but can't tell until you open them up exactly what's gone wrong. And so you have then to bring into play a whole lot of things that you may have done many times before, but in a different order, rather as the jazz musicians may be improvising around a theme. But they none of them know quite where it's going to go until it gets there, even though they've all been practicing for years and they've got years of experience. How it comes together on the night is a bit unpredictable, and it can be like that in surgery as well.
Is this part and parcel of the programme as well, is to coming to events like this where a man in scrubs, not in fancy dress, is an unusual sight, but maybe a necessary one?
Absolutely, and for us it's a fantastic opportunity to come to a place we don't normally come to engage with people we don't normally meet, and to invite them to come and see what we do in a completely different way. And to us, the fact that it's out here in the open air, that we've got people who've come mainly to hear the music, we've got different people from the ones who usually come and see what we do. And to us, it's a really important part of engagement, which is what we're particularly interested in, how we can make connections with people. We don't want just to see people when they get appendicitis and come into our operating theatre. We want to make connections with people before that happens, or even if it never does. We want to give people the sense that surgery is highly skilled but really exciting, very theatrical in every sort of way, and that performance can be an exciting thing, even if it's the kind of performance you don't normally see.
That was Dr. Roger Kneebone, Professor of Surgery at Imperial College London. So, back to the music. Next in the studio, Tent, we have indie rock band Happiness, who hail from South London. Their debut album, Weird Little Birthday, has been a hit with the critics this year, drawing inspiration from the likes of Pavement and other 90s college rock types. They played their latest song, which doesn't actually feature on the record. It's called You Come to Kill Me. Yeah. That was London-based Happiness playing You Come to Kill Me after their set at the Walled Garden. You're tuned in to Culture on Monocle 24, and this week we're at the Green Man Festival, more field-based antics after this.
If you're looking for a present for a loved one, something for the home, or some luggage to take on the road, why not visit one of our shops? Our beautifully appointed shops in London, New York, Toronto, Hong Kong and Tokyo sell a selection of the fruits of our collaborations with a number of our favourite brands, including Porter, Hackett, Ettinger, Barena and many others too. Plus, we can also help out filling in any gaps in your collection of back issues. So why not visit any of our shops today? You're guaranteed a very warm welcome.
You're listening to Culture on Monocle 24. We're doing a special show from the Green Man Festival. We're going back to the music now, to talk about it at least. Tom Hall was out and about on site with his roving microphone, and he chatted to a man that studied his music in Havana, the alt pop maestro Nick Mulvey, ahead of his set on Sunday.
I'm actually having a lot of memories from previous times I've been here, just come back as we've been driving on site. Good memories, yeah, really good.
I think there's an overwhelming amount of goodwill from the artists that play here. I mean, last night, Mercury Rev were on stage and they were saying some really heartfelt things. They were saying, like, we're not the youngest guys in the world. They could have picked, like, some really cool, exciting buzz band. And they said it really meant something to them that they were put onto headline here. Why do you think certain festivals are able to generate that really good feeling and maybe others don't quite hit the mark?
First thing I say is I recognise that good feeling here as well. I certainly feel the same. But then answering that is probably quite a complex question. Ultimately, it's going to be integrity, isn't it? But it's like how integrity survives from the beginning initial nucleus right the way to the edges and the end success story, and that's always an achievement, and you feel it at this festival. The curation is really good. That'll be one key part of it. I always feel that they choose well, and then I suppose they're very well endowed with the landscape and this valley, and I love the framing of the hill behind it and the very mature trees everywhere. All that stuff really is, that's the good stuff.
Surely there's time for you and me. Open your mind. Surely it's plain to see. You're not alone. Surely there's time for you and me. Open your mind. Surely it's plain to see.
And we are blessed with some glorious sunshine today, but you'll see where I'm going. This is really clever. It's not quite as warm as Havana, Nick, is it?
Oh, there you go.
Maybe you could tell people a little bit about your musical journey and some of the influences that come out in your sound today.
Yeah, totally. I think I should do after that crowbar. For me, getting to this point, it's had a lot of different chapters in it and a lot of different influences. And people often, when talking to me, refer back to this time when I was in Cuba, in Havana, which was very early on for me, but really set the tone for me in terms of my being comfortable with sounds that are from beyond my own culture. And I really had a lot of time there as a young musician in the music school that I studied at to focus on the guitar as an instrument, you know, and particularly my kind of classical technique. After that, I went to study at the School of Oriental and African Studies, and that was looking in ethnomusicology at kind of African music, but music from all over the world, you know. We'd look as much as like music from New York as from Senegal or somewhere like. But the point is, I think it all broadened my musical kind of taste, and it's meant that I'm making music today that has a lot of different threads in it, you know. Softly in the evening dusk, a woman is singing to me. She takes me back down the vista of my years until I see a child underneath the piano and the boom of the tingling strings, pressing the poised feet of his mother, who smiles at him as she sings. Cuckoo-doo-coo.
And the recent record, First Mind, when you're incorporating all of those influences, is it a conscious thing? Because you're almost like a scholar of music. You seem to be very into learning about the different paths that it can go down. When you're making your own tunes, I mean, is it more of a subconscious thing, or are you really trying to incorporate those influences very mindfully?
It's definitely not a conscious thing. Ultimately, the most important aspect of it has to come intuitively, and you can't really calculate it, because it's all about just expressing who I am at the end of the day, you know. That's what I'm doing, so everything that I've absorbed and taken in finds its own place in my expression, you know. But it's kind of, you can't force that. And yeah, I think, you know, if you think about it, it sounds like you've thought about it. Because he can still say every single day he's yearning to belong, yearning.
That was Tom Hall talking to Nick Mulvey, who went on to play a blinder. Laughs next, cats. Comedy's become a big part of the big festivals, and Green Man's offering is typically impressive, with big names, sure, but plenty of scope for discovery too. How do they do it? They get comedy honcho Henry Widdicombe to do it, and amongst much backslapping and backstage bonhomie, he sat down and I waved a big fluffy microphone in his face. That was my idea of a joke.
We always took our lead from their curation of the music, because when we started doing the comedy, there wasn't a specific comedy element of Green Man in 2008. So it's kind of like, with the music, you know that it's more about discovering bands. It's about you trust in them as the curators, and you go, they know what they're talking about with music. So we always wanted it to be that, and we'll often put really interesting acts on and just try and take our lead off the curation of the festival as a whole. So it's not necessarily about TV, radio people. It's about who's relevant right now in the live scene and seeing exciting people as they're coming up through, really.
And is that one of the things that you can break people here, or people who you wouldn't know or you didn't know as well as others, perhaps? You can put them on here and they can go down a storm, not just because it's a rainy day, clearly, because comedy is now such an integral part of all festivals. But is this the sort of place where you'd like people to discover new comic talent?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have a lot of acts that probably wouldn't get on other bills because they're not at that stage in their career. And you see them, and the audience is so nice here and so attentive. It's not like other... Because we are a spoken word of part of a music festival. We're not... We're an additional thing, really. But the audience is so attentive. that you can get slightly less experienced acts and give them opportunities on a bigger stage in front of bigger crowds, and they do great. Often they're far more hungry for it, so putting the performances of their lives, you know, and come off going, whoa. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, less about breaking people, but I think we've become a destination for the festival, for the crowd. We definitely get people just coming and seeing what's there. And so they will see new people. And like often you'll be with comics after and people will be going up and saying how good it was to them, and they wouldn't have known who that person was before. And because there are so many live comedians and only sort of 1% are on TV and radio, you know, and it's a completely different scene, I would say, is live comedy. And I think it's the type of thing that most people, the average person, goes to once a year, two times a year, and then you've got the passionate people that go all the time, you know. But this might be the only comedy that some of these people see all year, like the Green Man, and it'll be their thing to go.
You know how in the music side of the festival, the people that put on the playlist kind of try and get a sort of rhythm, or they kind of group people together. There's a kind of idea of curation, I suppose, with that, with getting the sound right. Do you do the same thing with the comedy, or do you just send people flying out into the spotlight?
I have a sort of general booking policy that I try and get things that interest me. So it's not just about being funny. It will be people that are doing interesting ideas, things like that. The way you curate it really is you don't want too many of the same thing at one time. You want things to be jarring against each other because they're actual different reactions. People think of laughter as one thing, but there's a whole range of ways you can laugh and feelings you can feel. So what you want to be doing is sending the audience one way, and then with the next act sending them another, because if you give them three of the same, they'll just be like, oh, here's another weirdo, or here's another straight guy. And the reason it's alternative is because it's an alternative. So you try and get that sort of mix throughout the night, really, to just keep it healthy, keep people on their feet watching the comedy and going, oh, well, now we're doing this. And so that's the idea. There is a lot of thought that goes into it, but it's sort of who's available when as well. So it's just putting together the jigsaw as best you can, really.
It's a very curated thing, but essentially, if they can turn up, it's brilliant. and I mean, there's a nice buzz around it. Walking past, it's always full. There's always a good vibe sort of surrounding the tent and stuff. In terms of, you know, you putting this tent on, is there a lot of personal choice in there as well? Presumably, it's got to push your buttons and make you laugh. That's got to be the start off, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all personal choice, yeah. To be honest. It's where I run another festival, and which is mine, and mine, that sounds wrong, but the one that
he says rubbing his hands together,
but it's sort of known for being sort of personal choice, really. And Green Man's the same. It's like it will be people that I enjoy a lot of the time, you know, and that's not a sort of guarded gate. You sort of pick people that you think will be right, but yeah, it's not usually people that I don't like.
Yeah. And just finally, when are the sort of high points? Is it when you have a name, or is it because there's a strange rhythm to how festivals work in terms of the music, in terms of the whole thing, how sort of waves of people wash through certain areas and then drib and drab away? Is that, do you have a kind of a time when you know you're going to be busy, for example?
Yeah, I mean, we get the schedules for all the stages quite early doors. So not necessarily what bands are playing when, but when they're going to be on. So you know at 9:30 on the main stage, there will be a big headliner. So, and you also know the gaps. So what we do is make the most of those gaps and put on big names in the gaps. So we're maximising the potential of potential audience. So now for Josh Widdicombe at 7:10, there's not really anything else on the big stages at that time. This place will be rammed, you know, and the same with Nick Helm, same with Pappies, you know. So we match up the big, our headliners with the gaps on the music stage, because we sort of always take the lead from the music stage and go, right, we're what people go to when they've had enough of music. They don't come to Green Man for comedy. So we just try and be there for them when they're looking for something a bit different.
That was Henry Widdicombe, the boss of Green Man's Last Laugh Tent. Boom, boom. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. New York singer Jeffrey Lewis has been combining the folk tradition with indie rock and tales of oh-so-modern city living for the last decade. The singer's way with a comic verse and comics themselves, his art is often part of the show, hit Green Man this weekend. Monocle's Tom Hall catches up with Jeff and tries to find his place in the folk canon.
Roll, bus, roll, take me off. A rolled sweatshirt makes the window soft. If I fall asleep, don't wake me up. roll, bus roll, take me up. Midnight.
Green Man is kind of like, it's known for being a little bit pastoral, a little bit rural, a little bit folk.
Beautiful health.
Yeah, do you consider yourself a folky kind of guy, or do you consider what you do to have more of an urban kind of theme, maybe?
Certainly urban. As a lifelong New Yorker, that's sort of my environment. And yet, I feel as though the music that I make is like the indigenous folk music, the aboriginal folk music of New York City. And there is a tradition of that. I think New York City has sort of produced its own weird folk music offshoot mutations for many decades. I sort of count myself among that lineage.
Do you think people get too hung up on the rules of folk music, almost? I mean, as I say, I mean, this place, it feels very sort of linked to almost paganism, and this, you know, we're in this beautiful valley and we're going to burn a man on Sunday. Do you think that you can be telling folk stories in any kind of genre and any kind of setting, really?
Certainly, I love the atmosphere and the combination of elements. You know, I mean, always driving through Wales, I always think of Led Zeppelin working on songwriting and cottages out here somewhere. And I think that that's another good example of, like, you know, they were taking deep, like, American blues, black tradition, and fusing it with a kind of Celtic or a Viking sort of storytelling, which is like a very white tradition. And that's this weird mishmash that ends up being Led Zeppelin. And then, you know, for myself, I've kind of got this, like, you know, for me, it's sort of the distorted guitar noise of, you know, the sort of New York subway rumble, and the noise of all of that filtered through and mushed up against the kind of bleaker street folk tradition of New York City, and the storytelling, and the, you know, the kind of Phil Oakes, Tom Paxton, Bob Dylan side of New York City folky stuff, and then, you know, the noisier sort of Sonic Youth, Richard Hell and the Voidoids, New York City stuff, which is all sort of part of, you know, I think all artistic stuff is just kind of mishmashing, putting it all into the blender, and each person ends up with their own art smoothie.
Do you think your music is mythical enough? Do you think it could do with some more gods and twigs and leaves, I feel?
I'm very non-mythical. In fact, I was very much not a part of the so-called freak folk movement of the 2000s, although I was somewhat on the fringes of that, and a number of people that I'm sort of friends with were, like, sort of part of what was called freak folk, and I've done some gigs with some of those people, but yeah, not, for me, I definitely always had one foot more in, like, indie rock and one foot in folk, even though I'm probably more of a fan of psychedelic folk music than most other folkies or indie rockers. I mean, I've got every single incredible string band record. I've got all these bands, Pearls Before Swine, I have every single record. Donovan, I actually have every single record. As a teenager, I was just always digging through used record bins, and those sorts of weird psychedelic folk albums really appealed to me. The early Tyrannosaurus Rex records, I absolutely adore that stuff. And in the 90s, it was quite hard to even find out any information. It was so mysterious. Pearls Before Swine, there was just no photos of the band on the record. It was just these eerie sounds. And I really learned how to play guitar and learned how to play listening to those Pearls Before Swine and Donovan records. You can hear a lot of that in my finger picking, especially on the earlier songs. Although the psychedelic element of it and that kind of spooky, eerie mythicalness, I think, is not so much in my own writing. I'm much more literal and specific, I guess. Yeah, I'm not very good at being abstract as a writer.
Though, two or three people are really going to like it.
That was Jeffrey Lewis speaking to Monocle's Tom Hall, and that brings us to the end of this week's show, where we'd like to thank Green Man for having us, thank the heavens for smiling upon us, and thank the beer and cider tent for keeping our whistles wet. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Holly Fisher, looking fantastic in her wellies and matching knitwear, and thanks to Paul Noble and Tom Hall for putting up the tent and getting the rounds in. Time for one final track this week from the beautiful vocals of New York-based Julie Byrne. Here she is with Natural Blue. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Yeah.